Hi, I'm Femi Okay. We are marking World Refugee Day on the stream at a time when the number of forcibly displaced people is the highest ever, 100 million people around the world. The reasons are a combination of COVID-19, conflict and climate change. Let's take a closer look at the numbers. Joining us to talk about the experiences of refugees, internally displaced people and stateless people, we have Mary, Camila and Taban. Ladies, thank you so much for joining our conversation. Mary, will you remind our audience who you are and what you do?
Hello, everyone. My name is Mary Maker. I am a South Sudanese refugee that has lived in Kakuma refugee camp my whole life. I work with UNHCR, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, the United Nations Refugee Agency, and I work to advocate for refugees.
Thank you, Mary. Hear more from you in a moment. Camila, welcome to the stream. Please introduce yourself to our audience.
Hello, thank you for having me. My name is Camila Alvarez. I'm the legal director at the Central American Resource Center, or CARESEN, in Los Angeles. We are an organization that does direct immigration legal services for refugees, including asylees, and organizing and advocacy around immigrants' rights issues.
All right, good to have you. Taban, welcome to the stream. Please introduce yourself to our international audience around the world.
Thank you so much for having me. Hi, I'm Taban Suresh. I am the founder of The Lotus Flower, and I'm also a One Young World ambassador. We support women and girls impacted by conflict and displacement, and we have safe social spaces inside refugee camps. And I'm also a genocide survivor myself, as well as being a stateless person. So I am Kurdish by background.
Thank you, ladies, for being part of our panel. If you would like to talk to Taban, Camila or Mary, you can do so on YouTube. Put your comments or questions right here and be part of today's show. Taban, do you remember, is there one searing memory from when you were a refugee that you would want to share with our audience? Because that connection, that connecting, the idea that this is possible, it could happen to me, what would you share? What would be the one instance that you would share with our audience?
I think for me, I would most probably share the moment that instigated it all for me to become a refugee. I was a four-year-old child playing in my grandmother's garden. I remember quite clearly playing with my doll. And there was a loud thud, rattling noise on the garden gate. It was like a metal gate and the floor was concrete, so you can imagine what sound that would make. And it startled me as a child. And I remember my uncle running out to open the gate. And for me as a child, I saw him and ran to him for safety. But when he opened the gate, it was two Iraqi soldiers standing there in front of us. And that basically started off the persecution of us being taken to prison and then, you know, from there being destined to be buried alive, but we had a miraculous escape and then dodging mines, bombs and bullets while trying to flee, going hiding, and my father being poisoned. And then eventually, you know, from the age of four to six, at the age of six, arriving in the UK as a refugee. So by that point, within 2 years, yeah. I'd seen quite a lot.
Oh, my goodness. And as a child, Mary, I'm thinking about that word refugee. It's so loaded for many people around the world because they haven't really experienced what it truly means. Why do you think that often people think refugee and they're not welcoming when that word comes up? Because this is part of the reason why we have 100 million people forcibly displaced. They don't need to be displaced if we're welcoming. Mary?
when people hear the word refugee, it comes with the word stranger. I hate the word stranger. And it's so much like connotated and attached to the word refugee. When people hear the word refugee, they think of people coming into our borders, they're coming to take over our space, then our government has to share stuff with them. And it really becomes like a big weight on someone that actually does not understand who is a refugee. Yeah. The fact that people don't understand the meaning of refugee, people have the dictionary explanation of refugee rather than the stories of refugee, the reason why a refugee is in fact seeking for safety in their borders. And I don't know how to just put it simple, but it comes off as that strange, that othering of they're not us.
Yeah. Camila, you see this on a daily basis. You're nodding your head. Articulate your nod.
Yes, so I definitely agree with Mary and couldn't have put it better that a lot of folks, when they hear the word refugee, think stranger, they think other, not thinking about the fact that, as you said, Femi, this could happen to anyone at any time. We are seeing unprecedented global crises, and it really could happen to anyone. In the United States in particular, there's been so much harmful rhetoric against immigrants as a whole, and in particular refugees. This othering, this criminalization, especially of Central American and Latinx refugees that are really just seeking asylum. I hear so much in my work, and I live in a very progressive area in Los Angeles, even here. How do you know that they're telling the truth? How do you know that things are as bad as they are? And if you sat down with some of my clients and with some of our community members and just listened to their stories, listened to who they are as people, you would have no doubt in your mind that these folks are telling the truth and are living through very unspeakable things and are deserving of refugee protections.
There are so many crises around the world in terms of refugees or migrants or displaced people that we have a packed show of contributors. So I want to bring in Sahat from the world's largest refugee camp, and that is in Cox's Bazar. This is what he told us a few hours earlier. Taban, I'd like you to have a listen to him, because it's really, how do you solve the issue of people getting out of these camps? Because often they're there for many, many years. Here is Sahat.
I, my family, and 1 million other people of my community became refugees in 2017. It's already 5 years we have been living here in this refugee camp. Our life have not been changed yet. Even our lives are getting worse day after day. So I would like to request international community to come forward and help us for going back to our country, Myanmar.
So much faith in the international community there from Sahat. I hear that often. If the international community only knew how much we were suffering, they would come and help us. Taban, reality.
I think the reality is, sadly, when, you know, and we've seen this in different types of conflict, when it's all over the media and it's headline news, then that particular region will get lots of attention. And then once that dies down, all the support and all the funding and all the hopes that you had for having help kind of goes with it as well. And so they become like forgotten groups of people. It varies in different situations. For example, in Cox Bazar, I know that, you know, the legalities of your status and what you can do and can't do as a refugee, it has a massive impact. For example, the region that we work in, we have lots of internally displaced people. So, for example, they might still have the right to work. They might still have the right, they have the right to their producing identity documents and things like that. But if you're in another region where you're in limbo, your legal status is in limbo, you almost have nothing and you are literally stuck in these camps and there's nothing anyone can do. And sadly, what we've seen as well in terms of our work's been impacted, you see funding going out from the region and their priorities are kind of allocated to the most recent conflict or some other situation. So you really do get millions of people in camps around the world kind of forgotten because it's no longer in the headline, sadly.
I see Mary nodding and I see Camila nodding as well. Mary, you go first.
You know, making refugeeship like a trend is a big thing, where when the Ukraine crisis came through, everyone is posting about it. And a few months in right now, it's starting to feel like the COVID report, where it's subsiding, it's going down. And for you as a refugee that is in that situation, it's your story is still with you. You're still in that situation, and all of a sudden you've been forgotten. For someone like me that came to the refugee camp when I was 2 to 4 years old, that 1 month turns into 10, into 1 year, into 10 years, and no one remembers your story, as if everyone is waiting for that next big thing to happen again to South Sudan, and then my story will be covered again, you know, or like waiting for the 20th of June for my story to be out again on World Refugee Day.
Wait for World Refugee Day so that everyone starts thinking about refugees for one day of the year, unless the headlines push refugees back into the headlines again. Earlier on today, Filippo Grandi, who's a High Commissioner of the UN Refugee Agency, he spoke to us, Camila, about this issue, about certain issues and certain refugees and certain displaced people being in the headlines and then being forgotten. And we said, what would you say to donors? This is what he told us. And then, Camila, please come off the back of the UN High Commissioner for the UNHCR.
All those operations at the moment are struggling, all those responses are struggling and need resources. And what I tell all donors is, I understand that Ukrainian refugees need support, but if somebody flees home because of war, persecution and violence, anybody fleeing for these reasons deserves the same support wherever they are.
Camila, thoughts?
Yeah, I completely agree. I also think it's more than donors. It's the world as a whole, and also politicians. One thing that we're seeing in the United States is this disparate treatment of different kinds of refugees, in particular with Ukrainian refugees. And I want to preface this by saying that the crisis in Ukraine is horrible, and Ukrainian refugees are 100% deserving of protections and resources. At the same time, we're seeing that at least in the United States, there are other groups who are not getting the same protections and resources, although they are undergoing very similar crises for way longer periods of time. So, for example, in the United States, there's a law called temporary protected status, where a country can be designated a temporary protected status, TPS, country, and folks from that country receive temporary protections in the United States, like work authorization, and they do not have to live with the fear that they'll be deported. So the Ukrainian crisis we saw really take the world's attention in February of this year. By April, there was a United States designation of Ukraine as a country that would receive temporary protected status. At the same time, we saw Cameroon get designated for temporary protected status, where groups have been advocating for TPS for Cameroon for years before the United States government actually designated them. At the same time, we saw the world react to the crisis in Afghanistan once the Taliban took over. That was August of last year. Afghanistan did not get designated for temporary protected status until May of this year. Right. And so you see this disparate treatment.
Will you just be just really... I'm just going to ask you to like take off the filter here. You basically did a list of how treatment is different. And do you want to just be very candid? What are you saying? Be bold, just say it. Be frank.
What I'm saying is that there was preferential treatment to white refugees in the United States. White refugees from Ukraine saw protections before Middle Eastern and Black refugees in the United States. And that is a treatment that may not have been intentional, but is real.
Camila,
and it affects people.
It may not have been intentional. Are you being really honest there, or are you just trying to make sure that you don't get in trouble for the future?
You're right. I thank you for calling me out on that. I believe it was intentional.
It was intentional. Do not tell fibs. Do not tell fibs on the stream. All right. I've got one.
I'd like to hear and say it.
Yeah. Go ahead, Taran. Yeah.
I mean, what we've been seeing in the UK, it's a completely racist policy that's been implemented. It's very, very clear in terms of the refugees that are being supported are white refugees, and if you're any shade darker than white, then you will be, and this is from my personal opinion, not One Young World, but you'll be flown to Rwanda as a solution. I mean, I think that's absolutely ridiculous. And I think the Ukrainian war, and I'm not taking away from it, I feel for the people, I've experienced it, seen it, and we help people that currently have experienced it. So I'm not taking away from that. But what it's done is it's completely lifted the... It's lifted the
pretense,
limb.
The pretense, pretending that there's a refugee issue where it's actually we have a black brown people issue, not a refugee issue. Let me back that up with something quite solid. So I want to take you to the Polish border in February of this year when people who were living in Ukraine were trying to get out of Ukraine. Let me show you what we saw. And one student telling her story, and then Mary, love you to react. Here we go.
There's been a lot of segregation and racism from the people who've managed to actually get to the passport control. It seems that there's a hierarchy of Ukrainians first, Indians second, Africans last.
Mary.
It's sickening to watch these videos over and over again. Anytime I'm watching it, it's just crazy because... being in that situation, you can inherently see the racism at hand, and just fleeing in itself is just so much trauma around it, and having to seek safety and being able to ask people to actually give you safety is absurd. You shouldn't be asking people for safety. It's our collective human responsibility to give everybody safety, you know. And watching these videos, I watched it like throughout the whole February, and it just doesn't. I'm losing even words on what to say. But the reality is, as a refugee trying to cross borders, it's regardless of your race or where you're coming from, you need safety. That's a code for war. I don't know what codes are there, but that in itself should tell you that you should be welcoming and you should give everybody safety despite where they're coming from.
I have a theory that I want to put to you, Camila and Taban, and that is that what we saw with Ukraine is a little bit like what we saw with COVID-19. We were told that there weren't resources, there wasn't funding, we couldn't mobilise to do all sorts of very critical things very fast. And then COVID happened and bang, there was the money. Ukrainian refugees needed assistance and boom, there were all the programmes. They were allowed to work, they were allowed to stay in countries, people gave them their homes. It is possible. So if I was going to take away a positive takeaway from what we have learned at this moment is... the racism, the prejudice is now being, there's light been shone on that. And is that possible, or am I being too optimistic of what we have learned from the Ukraine crisis, which is still, of course, ongoing? Camila, you go first.
I will say that I agree with you that it has shown some light. Whether it will actually impact people caring is a different story. Because as with the COVID-19 crisis, people cared until they didn't. And so there is this light being shown on this racism problem. However, how do we get the global community to care and to move politicians and different key stakeholders into eliminating that racism is a completely different story. I will say that we saw that same racism at the border with the different treatment of Ukrainians being let into this country to seek asylum in the United States, just as soon as they came being let in, where we saw black and brown immigrants being detained outside of the country for months and for years. And to be honest, that has been a problem that's been right in people's backyards in the United States for a while, and they encourage it. And so I think there has to be this reckoning of the global community that we see this racism, the light's being shown, but what do we do now? What do we demand of the political actors? What do we demand of donors to say, this can't happen? And it's going to take everybody seeing it, understanding about it, and caring about it, and then taking the next step. How do I engage and take action and push folks that are in power to change these racist policies?
When we have 100 million forcibly displaced people around the world, it means that our approach to displaced people needs some overhauling, perhaps, or maybe we're not asking the right questions. For instance, do not refugees, displaced people themselves, have to be at the heart of the solution, of finding the solutions? To ban. You're nodding your head, and Mary's like, yes, let me get at you. So, Taban, you go first of all, because often these programs are put together and nobody's asked the people who are displaced, what do you need? Taban, but you don't do that. That's where you start. That's your starting point, correct?
That's exactly, you know, I think I've had so many discussions this week, and, you know, it's been, what's the solution? And I've turned around and said, well, why don't you bring the refugees, the people that are actually experiencing it, to the table? Mm-hmm. Ask them what kind of solutions they'd like to see. I know in our centres, and we, you know, if you just take it down to the small community level, in our centres, when we try and implement projects, we ask the women and girls what kind of projects they'd like to see, because they're the ones living in the camps. They're the ones that know what kind of things they'd like to experience on a day-to-day basis. And it's exactly the same kind of thinking. Mm-hmm. Ask the questions, include them in the solutions, find out what solutions would be best from their perspective. I mean, we talk about refugees, but I think it's really important for, like, the global community, people to start bringing them into the discussions and actually asking them what they would like to see.
Mm-hmm. Mary?
I just feel, just like she has just said it, most of the time it's like you want to help a community, but you actually don't understand the community. To be able to help the refugees, first to understand who is a refugee, what does the refugee need? And that means letting the refugees tell their own stories from their own perspective. They won't sugarcoat anything. Give them the space and the platform mm-hmm. to be able to put out their frustrations and what they actually need. In that way, we are able to help more and more refugees. And here is the mistake that most organizations do, where they think they've already made the plans on how they're going to help the refugee, and the refugee is not even aware of it. So when you come in, you're wasting the energy and the time. Where, like, when we are fleeing, I fled as a kid. My mom fled as a farmer. My dad was a politician. And everyone has skills and resources to bring forward. So it's all about understanding what resources already exist in the refugee camp. Then how can you add to it as an NGO, as an organization that wants to help refugees? Right. Understanding that dynamic in itself is the key.
All right. I'm going to leave you with one more refugee story. And that's one, of course, you know very well. And that one comes from Ukraine. Here's Sergei.
More than 7 million people moved from the battle zones in the east to central and western Ukraine. And now they are safe, but they are not all right. They are accommodated in the very inconvenient conditions of the collective transit centers. They don't have any employment. They suffer shortage of the basic means for survival, like food and hygiene. And they are traumatized. They are shocked, scared. They lost their relatives, and they need psychological support, therapy, counseling, and children need very basic things like game, play, entertainment.
Thank you, Sohei. Thank you to everybody who contributed to this show, to Mary, Camila, Taban, to you online on YouTube. We really appreciate you. Thanks so much for being part of today's program. And I feel for me, the takeaway is let's treat every displaced, stateless refugee as if they were coming out of Ukraine. I feel like there, somewhere, is a solution to how we look after the world when they're moved out of their own homes. Thanks for watching. I'll see you next time. Take care.